This is The Cable.
Big bid on 10-year treasuries over the last week.
Tech story is front and centre.
A lot of people are saying, no thank you, step back. You're saying, get in, why?
Your connection from the London market close to the US market action.
A significant sell-off in European assets.
The dollar a little bit stronger today.
This is a stock that is increasingly being shorted.
The Cable.
An historic moment from which there can be no turning back.
With Jonathan Ferro and Guy Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening to the City of London. It is a beautiful, if chilly, evening here in London. It's just gone 5:30 p.m. in the evening. It is Friday night. What a Friday it has been. We have John Ferro in New York covering all the action there. We've got me, Guy Johnson, here in London covering what has been a fascinating session from a European perspective. Out in Asia, it started so well earlier on today if you were long equities. The Hang Seng soaring higher, up over 4%. We had the Nikkei up by 2.5%. The CSI 300 in China up 3.5%. All of this built on the idea that there was going to be some detente between the United States and China when it came to trade. Europe got off on the front foot and stepped into the Friday session feeling positive. It didn't last that long. By lunchtime, it was pretty clear that the situation was going to change and that the US markets were going to drag us down. That has certainly happened. Two catalysts seem to be behind it. One is the fact that Apple has been pounded today after delivering numbers. And the second one was that trade story has had cold water poured on it by the likes of Larry Kudlow.
It's been ugly, Guy Johnson.
It has been ugly.
It has been absolutely ugly. I'm here.
We're down by a percent on the S&P 500.
Yeah.
John, the Hang Seng was up 4.
I'd say it's trade front and centre because futures were up big, even with Apple down hard earlier this morning. And I find it absolutely fascinating that there is this sort of really bad miscommunication going on within and around the White House in terms of reporting, conflicting voices on what is happening. The president told us he had a nice talk with President Xi. That was when the happy talk started and put a bid into risk. And it just seems, Guy, it's not clear what comes out of this. And I actually asked the question earlier this morning, whether you believe the stories or not out there as an investor, do you want to trade on any of this when it could just be campaign politics and not economic policy?
And it felt exactly like that first thing.
Yeah, it felt like campaign politics, but at the same time, if you're an investor, you're looking at this situation and thinking, well, there's some significant upside risk here. We've had a huge correction through October, and I don't know if I want to be on the wrong side of this going into the G20. So you see it rip and then you see it roll over. And I think this is a very, very hard market to trade. And I use the word trade very carefully, because to invest, it's a very different picture. But to trade this market at the moment is really, really difficult.
It's whippy, and I think it's going to stay whippy for quite some time. As you say, November is really shaping up to be quite a month. Cameron Cries on the M Live has said, get your sleep this weekend because you're basically buckling up for a bumpy ride into next week with the midterms and everything else on deck as well. So we bring in Sarah Ponczek, cross-asset reporter right here at Bloomberg, and Michael Reagan, senior editor and lead blogger for the Markets Live, the M Live team that we've got here. Sarah, what did you make of today?
I would agree that trade really is front and center because, yes, leading up to the midterms, we have heard all of this talk, the president tweeting, then a story running saying that talks are going pretty nicely. She and President Trump are probably going to meet at the G20. I don't know if all traders and investors were buying it. A lot of people told me that it seemed like this was bluster ahead of the midterms trying to rally their base. But at the same time, clearly some did because the markets were rallying off the comments. And now, clearly, after Kudlow comes out and he just denies it. I mean, it looks like we're just in for more talk and back and forth and a long time until maybe we potentially do get a deal.
Do we believe Kudlow? There's a lot of kind of two-way risk being
put in
here.
I'm going to stay out of this conversation. Throw that question to Michael Reagan.
Michael Reagan is unavailable to answer your questions. Look, I think we've all learned this is a White House that changes its mind frequently, that one hand doesn't necessarily agree with the other hand, and you know what one person is saying is going on is not necessarily what the next person
and
you
Michael,
talk to is
I do wonder
is
whether it, regardless of whether you believe any of this, what it actually comes down to is this very complex game theory going into a very important bilateral. They don't want to make it look like they're ready to make concessions. The reporting here at Bloomberg, and let me tell you, you don't just get one source. You get multiple sources.
Right.
If something is going on in Washington, D.C., if someone is planning to draft something, somebody knows.
Right.
And
right.
if you get enough people to tell you that, you have a story.
Right. Yeah. And clearly that's what happened. I mean, you know how it works in this building. We don't go to press with something that we're not.
Absolutely not.
100% confident with. And, you know, it's the definition of truth in our
what I'm asking here is the market, to a certain extent, clearly believed what it was hearing from the president overnight. Why are we believing the denial? I'm just kind of wondering where you listen, what you listen to, and how much signal you get from the noise that is there. Clearly, Kudlow is like Larry's trying to introduce some two-way risk into this story. As John says, this is game theory. This is a setup into a meeting that is coming later on this month. But if you're trying to trade this,
yeah.
What do you listen
but
to?
But didn't we have this story in cable earlier this week?
Yep.
We essentially had the very same story played out right. in a different way.
Right.
We had a story in the Times that essentially said that the Europeans, Barnier and everybody, were ready to get on board and have a deal for financial services in the City of London. And what neither side wanted to do was make out there was a deal, because they didn't want to get to the deadline and have this whole thing fall apart, because nothing's been agreed upon. I think everyone is very nervous to set out their stall publicly. And when you do get this kind of reporting, I think what's really, really difficult, it's easy for us to comment within the walls of a media institution, knowing what kind of processes reporters go through to report things. It's easy for us here to make a clear distinction and say this is this and that is that. But if you're an investor, you're looking at this situation and thinking, right, okay, Bloomberg said this, but then Larry Kudlow said that. So what am I going to trade on?
Right.
I think you have to take into account as well, even though there were reports and the president had said that talks are moving along nicely, that means talks were moving along nicely. There wasn't actually a deal. Maybe they were being more willing than they have in the past to get to the table and create a deal with China. But like you said, John, the U.S. still wants to have the upper hand in this situation. And even after those reports, I don't know how much investors truly believed that this was going to mean that we are going to have the G20 meeting in Argentina and everything was going to be nice and all of a sudden everything was going to be pretty and easy again. I mean, it didn't mean that there was never going to be issues or problems or debate going right. forwards. It just means that maybe people are more willing to talk, which is almost where we've been.
And you look at the... Look at the Sorry. Actual headline on our story. Trump said to ask cabinet to draft possible yep. trade deal with Xi. So it's not like, you know, he had his pen in his hand chomping at the bit here. I think the market might have taken the ball and run a little too hard with it, thinking.
But but that's the interesting point there here, isn't it? The market psychology. There was clearly a pent up bid, particularly in Asia, that wanted to react to this.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone thinks that someday someone's going to blink on one side of this issue,
and you don't want to miss that.
Yeah, exactly. I think, that's the exact sort of setup leading into a story like this.
Guys, you're going to stick with us. Great week, really interesting week, hasn't it? It's
been wonderful phenomenal. Week.
Sarah Ponczak is exhausted.
It's Friday.
I am.
Year's not over yet. Cross-asset reporter for Bloomberg alongside Michael Regan, senior editor and lead blogger for Markets Live. Alongside Guy Johnson in London, I'm Jonathan Ferrow in New York City. What a week it has been for global markets. The conversation continues right here on Bloomberg Radio, live across the capital on DAB Digital Radio. You are listening to The Cable. Happy Friday.
This is The Cable with Jonathan Ferrow and Guy Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
This is The Cable live across the capital on DAB Digital Radio alongside Guy Johnson in New York. I'm Jonathan Ferrow in New York, and Guy's in London, and I'm really tired. Here's the story for Apple stock. We are down by 7% in today's trading.
1 o'clock in the afternoon.
It is brutal. Guy, come on, give me a break. It is 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but it's Four Show Friday. We're down by around about 7% on Apple. We trimmed $70 billion off the market cap of the world's biggest company, no longer a $1 trillion company. Alongside Guy Johnson in London and me in New York is Sarah Ponczak, cross-asset reporter for Bloomberg, alongside Michael Regan, senior editor and lead blogger for Markets Live. Kind of really interests me, this story. So they come on the call. we're not going to give you your toys anymore. We're not going to tell you what your iPhone units are anymore. And then everyone goes, oh, well, this must be it. The cycle must be over. And I sat there as this call was playing out and just thought, you didn't think the cycle was over? You needed to be told that they weren't going to tell you unit sales to work out where this was going. Where have these people been?
Well, you know, hey, look, 7% drop in Apple is not something you see every day. This is
it's real money.
Biggest right. drop in 5 years almost. I mean, it's a great point. I mean, clearly the iPhone sales have plateaued. Is that surprising? I guess it's not that surprising, but people clearly reacting poorly to it. And I think if you take a step back and look at, you know, big cap tech, especially these consumer internet names, the so-called fangs, it's kind of a common theme here is growth rates have plateaued. You look at any of Amazon, Netflix, Google, any of them, the growth rates for next year are not what you typically think of for big cap growth. And if you're a highly valued company and interest rates are rising and your growth rates are slowing, I mean, it's not a good recipe. It's just not.
It made me kind of, you look at the iPhone and you think, just kind of think about what the iPhone is as well. Why would you need to upgrade your iPhone now? It's
right.
got a great camera on it.
Right.
It's got the processing power you need to pretty much put a man on the moon. And it does everything you need. I don't understand why they need another generation of iPhones. Unless you are running really complex games on your phone, you don't need it. And I would have thought that 95% of people that are using their iPhones aren't using it for anything like that. And I just think this is an admission that this is as good as it gets. This is kind of form factor peak as well. It's not just kind of the peak of the cycle. This is the form factor. This is the end of the road for it.
This is something I think about a lot. I like to think of myself as someone who likes to keep up with technology. Yes, I am a millennial, and I still have but I still
you guys
have
ruined everything.
We ruin everything. But I mean,
that was the baby boomers, but that's for another day.
Hey, people say it about
us
too.
We can do that another day.
Next
block. I've got a whole show on that for you. Carry on.
No, but
Guy and I get off scot-free, I think, as the Xers.
You do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say, I have my iPhone 8. I've had it now for a while. And there really is no reason for me to upgrade my phone when it is working just fine. And yet in the past, some people have accused Apple of putting batteries in phones that don't last a certain amount of time, and then you just piss off your consumer base in a way, and then they get mad at Apple. But people don't need to upgrade.
And then I go out and buy one.
And then you go and buy one.
What?
But also the same people who need the software to play games on a phone are not buying iPhones.
How many times have we had a day like this for Apple where everyone comes out and says it's over? This is a cash machine.
That's a fair point. That's
massive
fair point.
Margins. I think everyone's going to get over the communication.
Yeah.
And then you've got to make a judgment call. Do you want to buy the cash machine or not? And if you weren't making this judgment call up until yesterday afternoon, then I'm sorry you've been doing it wrong the whole time.
Yeah, that's
you know,
a fair point.
It was there to be seen where this iPhone business was going. Everybody out there was telling you to focus on the ASP. They were telling you it wasn't about units anymore. And if you waited until yesterday afternoon to suddenly realize that this story's changed, then I just think you're doing it wrong.
Markets certainly maybe taking a different view on that because it's
quite clearly.
There's a lot of money that's come off the table today. When we come back, we're going to talk about what next week is going to look like because next week could be really quite a week. Stay tuned and buckle up. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Jonathan Ferrow and Guy Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening to the City of London. It is 5:48 in the British capital. John Ferrow and Guy Johnson joining you this Friday night. What a week it has been. But let's talk about the week that is coming up. Actually, before I do that, let me just tell you now that the S&P 500 is down 0.8%. The Dow's down 0.7%. European markets finished kind of up a little bit, but Asian markets had a real strong session. Hang Seng up 4%. How much change throughout the day? I guess we could probably blame Larry Kudlow for that, but I guess that was probably his intention. John, let's talk about what's coming up next week. I'm just trying to run through exactly what we're going to get throughout the week. And what sort of stands out to me is that on Monday, we get the US sanctions on Iran oil go back into effect. Have you seen the president's tweet?
Yes, I have.
That he's delivered? Sanctions are coming November the 5th.
It looks like a movie promo.
It does have that kind of vibe about it, doesn't it?
The sad thing about this is that sanctions have been proven not so much to shape government policy abroad, but proven to hurt the citizens of that country.
Yeah, in fact, if you take a look at international theory, most sanctions are delivered for domestic purposes rather than international purposes. That's generally why they're applied, to have a domestic effect. And I guess with a couple of days before midterms, 4 days before midterms, you take a look at that and you can kind of understand maybe his thinking.
Yeah, and for anyone guy that really understands or even remotely understands politics in Iran, they'll have a pretty good understanding of how important the siege mentality is of the leaders of Iran. And in fact, this won't move the electorate to push and turn around and say to their leaders, look, we need to change course. In fact, it will embolden the leadership to carry on going in the direction the United States,
the more conservative leadership,
does not want this leadership to go. Anyone with even a remote understanding of Iranian politics really understands that.
Oil prices are down, though, which is interesting.
So here's the thing with crude. You're going to get some waivers. I understand we are getting a series of waivers for a variety of countries who, so long as they move their Iranian crude imports down in the right direction, they can carry on importing Iranian crude. And quite clearly, the sensitivity around that is that the president does not want a high crude price off the back of his foreign policy. The other thing is the Saudis. What was interesting about the diplomatic crisis of the last couple of weeks with the Saudis is that it was actually a downside risk to the crude price, because Saudi Arabia needed to buy some favors, some diplomatic favors, with the United States. And if anything, it's a more significant downside risk to the crude price than it is upside, because now the leadership in Saudi Arabia needs to do a whole lot more to keep the president of the United States on side. So I think there's a really interesting dynamic taking place in the Middle East that is not perhaps as obvious as it might seem on the surface.
What I think is interesting is that you've also got and we'll get the guys' take on this, Sarah Ponczek and Mike Reagan joining us in the studio. You've got a very different message being communicated by the commodities markets at the moment, particularly oil, to the payroll numbers today. Crude is coming down. It's signalling maybe, and this is a supply and demand story, but it's certainly signalling that global growth is not looking that rosy right now.
Oh, the PMIs have done all month, all week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
And don't forget that, you know, we've had this dollar rally. Yesterday.
That's a factor.
Right.
Yep.
Came down a little bit yesterday. But, I think the assumption is the dollar is going to remain firm for a while. So that's obviously not going to help crude, too.
And there's been a lot of moving parts, too, as it comes to the oil market. I mean, you have everything going on with the idea of, is demand going to slow across the globe because of everything going on? But at the same time, you have the Iran sanctions. You have production in the U.S. picking up, production in Russia picking up, OPEC saying that they're going to pick up the reduction. So you have to keep in mind how countries and different areas are also producing as well. And then, like John said, yes, we have the sanctions going in, but the U.S. has already said they're going to grant about 8 countries waivers. So it's really hard to kind of take this all into account and play one fact against the next.
As we take stock of the week as journalists, I think we like to sort of stress test the extreme cases and really explore the tail risks. And what I think is interesting going on the week, I'm not sure how big a tail risk this actually is. It may actually be a base case for some people. Guy, it looks like we're heading towards what some people might describe as a manufacturing recession. The data we've had out of Asia is not good. Chinese PMIs, the manufacturing, the official gauge, is literally just above 50, so just in expansion territory. There are a series of economies, including Thailand, Taiwan, Malaysia, sub 50, Italy, sub 50. I know the United States is coming off some big levels, but even that has rolled over in the latest ISM.
Germany. So you take a look at Germany. Basically, Italy is a derivative in this story of Germany. And Germany is a derivative of the global economy. Italy is a large subcomponent supplier, particularly in the north of Italy, into the German manufacturing sector. It is all slowing down. And it's interesting, John, I think we're starting to see the first cracks emerging from the ECB. There is a story this evening talking about the fact, and this is kind of relatively easy for the ECB to potentially do, but apparently the ECB is considering another round of cheap long-term loans for the financial sector. This according to M&I.
Just as they're pulling back from quantitative easing, it's pretty clear they can't take the foot off the stimulus pedal completely.
Yeah, but they are clearly worried that they are starting to see the first evidence now of a not temporary slowdown, but something more sustained.
And wasn't it interesting, Sarah, that on a day where you get such an ugly PMI read out of Italy, you also get a big bid into BTPs? I wonder if there's an increasing appreciation that the ECB is just not going to be able to back away in a way that some people might like the ECB too.
Absolutely. It's pretty interesting because the ECB keeps saying and making it seem like they want to take a hands-off approach. But if it gets to the point where they have to step in, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. You can even, it's very different, of course, but how it relates to the Fed and everyone talking about, oh, is the Fed going to slow its path because the stock market went crazy in October? I mean, they don't want to, clearly. They want to stay very independent and back off. And no one thought that we were anywhere near close where the Fed put would come in. But it's something that's kind of being floated around.
Great to have you with us, guys, as we wrap up the week. Guy Johnson, firmly in London. Myself, Jonathan Farrow.
Well, it's Friday here. It's Friday evening here.
It is pub time for you, Guy. I do feel bad for you. It's coming up to 6
Have
o'clock.
One for us, Guy.
We'll meet you in a couple hours.
He's staying late for us. Guy Johnson, thank you. Michael Regan, senior editor and lead blogger for Markets Live. And Sarah Ponsek, cross-asset reporter for Bloomberg. What a week. Another big week to come, I'm sure. The data's light, but a Federal Reserve decision in focus and a statement that I'm sure we'll read and then pick out one word and trade trillions of dollars worth of assets on. It's that kind of world. This is The Cable. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.